You are Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast on the Houston Rockets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
To an off-day episode of Locked On Rockets, your home for daily podcast coverage of the Houston Rockets. I'm your host, Ben Dubose of Sports Talk 790. Today's show is brought to you courtesy of our friends and partners over at SeatGeek. Download that SeatGeek mobile app and enter the promo code LORockets, and you can get a $20 rebate via mail just from using that promo code today. Now, as we chat on this Thursday afternoon, it's an off day for both the Spurs and the Rockets. Game 2 last night, 121-96 in San Antonio's favor. Obviously not an ideal result for the Rockets, but they are tied at 1 with the series going back to Houston. So essentially it's now a best-of-5 series with Houston having home court with 3 of the 5 games, potential 5 games, I should say, within the friendly confines of Toyota Center, including each of the next 2. So Houston's definitely in the driver's seat. What happens tomorrow night? Obviously, we'll have to wait and see, but generally, you have to feel good about where the Rockets are at, not just in terms of having home court, but the level of play. Game 1 was a true beatdown. The Rockets were up by 30 at the half, control literally every minute. I know what the box score looked like last night, but the reality is that the Rockets were nearly the Spurs equal for 3 quarters, and then essentially just spiraled out of control in the 4th. A lot of frustration, and the margin was artificially high. Generally, the Rockets have been the better team over the first 2 games, and that was in San Antonio. Now you get back to Houston, a crowd that should be absolutely jumping, and you have to like the position the Rockets are in. But the X factors, and we're going to talk about them on this show plenty, are the injuries. The Rockets, that starts with James Harden. Last night, we know going into the series that he had an ankle tweak. He says that's fine. Newsflash, James Harden always says it's fine. He never plays up any injuries. Last night, we saw the Rockets working on his hip during a timeout. D'Antoni confirmed after the game that he did tweak his hip, but said he's fine, just completely downplayed the incident. The bigger takeaway in the post-game media availability last night and this afternoon when the Rockets practiced at Toyota Center and met with the media, you could see that Harden is, well, ill. He's not feeling well. He's coughing, sneezing, wheezing, whatever you want to call it. He's certainly not 100% from a medical perspective. Now, that's better than injury because, well, especially when you have the resources of the Houston Rockets, you know they're going to be doing everything they can to get him back to full health as soon as possible. But I do think that plays a role in what happened last night. I don't think it's as simple as, well, there's one singular issue. I think it's probably a combination, a little bit after the effect of the ankle, maybe something with the hip, and then the illness. But bottom line, he just didn't feel good. He didn't have the explosion we saw him with in game 1. And I think that's a little bit refreshing if you're the Rockets that, well, it wasn't as if the Spurs magically came up with some new scheme that just completely limited him. The issue, or at least a large part of the issue, was self-inflicted in terms of the things going on within James's body. Now, of course, that needs to get better, but, well, he's now home. He's getting to sleep in his own bed. There's close to 48 hours between Game 2 and Game 3. So all you can do is hope that the Rockets are doing the right things. They have a very qualified medical staff led by Keith Jones and hope for the best. The real storyline with injuries, of course, is the San Antonio Spurs and Tony Parker confirmed today. Ruptured quad, out for the playoffs. I think we all knew it last night. You could see it in his face immediately. And then for him not even be able to limp off to be carried off the court by his teammates, I think we all knew what was happening there. Now, what's the impact going to be? I've been all over the map on this. Initially, I downplayed it. However, the more I look at it now, I can see a bigger impact than it might first appear. The reason I downplayed it at first, obviously Parker's numbers for the season are fairly pedestrian, 10 points, 4.5 assists a game. The Spurs have an extremely deep rotation, 10, 11 players at times. They have qualified guards off the bench. Patty Mills, Manu Ginobili, each can play the point at least briefly and in theory are capable of taking on larger roles. So initially, I was in the camp that this isn't going to be that big of a deal. And in Friday's Game 3, it might not be because the Spurs might be capable of rallying around it. Also, you never know. If Kawhi gets as hot as he was last night, that can make almost nothing else matter. So short term, yeah, you might have the talent, or you do have the talent, I should say, the Spurs. You have the depth to potentially mitigate it. But the more I look at it, I do think over the course of 5 games, which is essentially what this is now, a best-of-5 series with 3 on the road, I've seen a lot of things that make me think it might be a bigger deal than I initially suspected. first talking with Jeff Garcia, my friend over in San Antonio, host of Locked On Spurs. He kept hitting the leadership theme over and over again. I'm the type of guy, I tend to look at statistics first, have a big picture mindset, but this is the kind of thing, when you go deep into a tight series, your floor general with three of these potential five games in Houston, this is one scenario with this Houston crowd, three games on the road, where I could see, yeah, maybe that leadership void does mean something. The other thing that I looked at that really made me think about it, when the Spurs have had true breakthroughs this postseason, Game 6 last night, moments when they had just taken over a game in the fourth quarter. In general, Tony Parker has been a big part of that. He had 27 points in the Game 6 against Memphis. That was the closeout game on the Grizzlies' home floor. He had 18 points early in the fourth last night before he went out. 8 of 13 shooting, including 2 of 2 from 3. So even though his numbers for the season are fairly pedestrian, think about Tony Parker. And of course, we know what he used to be. He's not the player that he was 5 years ago anymore. We're all aware of that. But in his prime, this was a guy who was a top 5 point guard in the entire world. Incredibly elite. He won NBA Finals MVP, and deservedly so. So this is a guy who, it doesn't always come out, but there is an extra gear in him. And when I predicted this series, I predicted the Rockets in six, based in part on the Rockets just having a little more upside from a playmaking perspective. Well, the absence of Tony Parker does give the Rockets a little bit more of an advantage in terms of their playmaking, in terms of their upside. Because when the Spurs really click offensively, when you look in the playoffs, game two of this series, game six of the first round, Tony Parker having one of those throwback games is a part of the upside scenario for the Spurs. So it may not change the Spurs that much game in, game out. They have perfectly qualified guys off the bench, they're able to fill those minutes at, you know, worst case, a league average level, if not slightly above, depending on how hot Patty Mills or Mario Ginobili might be on a given night. But for the Spurs to get to a very high level offensively, enough to maybe offset all the playmakers that the Rockets have, Tony Parker is a big part of their upside. How much does he mean day in, day out? I don't know, but his absence takes away one of the obvious routes, or the only routes, really, that we've seen from them postseason, when they can really click at a very high level. So again, my summary, it's not necessarily going to matter in game three, although it certainly could, but taking away that upside, also taking away that leadership with three games out of the next four on the road, eventually, the more I think about it, it is a fairly significant injury and thus a potential boost to the chances the Rockets have of winning this best of seven series. Now, that's my breakdown of it, but I know you guys are probably sick of hearing just from me this week. Both the postgame shows have been solo Ben Dubose recaps because, well, 11:30 at night, that's just the easiest way to work it. But I have wanted to get a little bit more broader perspective. So this afternoon, in just a moment, I'm going to be joined by Eric Spyropoulos. He's a good friend of mine and the show, been on a few times before. He's Eric Spyroz on Twitter, writes for both 16 Wins of Ring and Hoops Habit, covering the Rockets and the NBA. Got to get him connected right now. But while I'm doing that, I want to tell you guys about our friends and partners over at SeatGeek, because folks, they can be a tremendous resource this weekend. I retweeted something today showing that of the 8 semifinal sites in the NBA, the Rockets are by far the hottest ticket. The Rockets are playing well. It's been a while. Really, it's just the third time this century that the Rockets have been to the second round of the playoffs or further. The atmosphere in Houston is great. The Rockets have a great fan base. Also, they're playing San Antonio, I-10 rivalry, so you're going to have some visiting fans too. And what does all that add up to? Well, tickets are at a premium. So if you want to get tickets to either of the games this weekend, by the way, both weekend primetime games, Friday at 8:30 for game 3, Sunday at 7 for game 4, weekend primetime games against the rival Spurs, you want to get in, you're probably going to have to look at the secondary market sites. And among those secondary sites, to me, SeatGeek is by far the best. They're where I go whenever I want to buy tickets because they do all the cross comparisons for you. They look across the websites so you know you're getting the best deal. They also grade every ticket from 1 to 100 so you know you're getting the best bang for your buck. It's just quite simply the most efficient way to buy tickets. And the best part of this, you guys, it's my listeners here at Locked On Rockets, y'all all get a $20 rebate off of your first SeatGeek purchase, and it's so easy. To get that, here's what you do. Download the SeatGeek app, go to the settings tab and click add a promo code, then enter the promo code LO Rockets. From there, SeatGeek will send you $20 in the mail after you've made your first ticket purchase. So remember, folks, download that SeatGeek app and enter the promo code LO Rockets today. So it looks like Eric is all fired up and ready to go. So give me one moment. I'm going to get him connected right now. And in just a moment, we'll be talking with Eric Spyropoulos, NBA writer for Hoops Habit, Rockets beat for them, about his thoughts on the injuries and, well, what adjustments and matchups are likely going to be significant this weekend as the series shifts back to Houston for Game 3 Friday and Game 4 on Sunday. Eric, how's it going today, man?
I'm doing pretty well. How are you, Ben?
Doing well for an off day, a little tired after all these 8:30 p.m. tips, which, shoot, I know it's 9:30 for you, so whatever, you got to get through it. It's easier to deal with after game one when your team wins, but unfortunately we don't have that luxury today. Eric, what I've been talking about the last few minutes, of course, is the impact of what we now know is a season and series-ending injury for Tony Parker, the ruptured quad. My initial take last night, I didn't think it was that big of a deal. Really, I just don't want to see folks get their hopes up unnecessarily because the Spurs are a very deep team. Obviously, you have guys on the bench like Patty Mills and Manu Ginobili that can take more minutes. They're certainly capable. Tony Parker, over the balance of an 82-game schedule, he's fairly pedestrian, 10 points, 4.5 assists per game. So while it's certainly not a good thing for the Spurs, I wasn't on the train of thought when it happened of, well, this being a season-turning thing. However, the more I look at it today, and I look at when the Spurs have really stood out these playoffs, the game last night when they were able to shoot so well for the first three quarters and barely stay ahead of the Rockets, they did it with Parker scoring 18 points, 8 of 13 from the field, made both of his threes. Both game 4 and game 6 of the Memphis series, he had 20-plus points. Game 6, he was downright enormous, in which he had 27. That was the one game they're actually able to win in Memphis and close out the series. So I guess where I'm at with this, initially I looked at the season-long numbers, I didn't think it was that big of a deal. But on looking at it at a second glance, it feels like Tony is a big part of their upside scenario. You know the Rockets have more playmakers in this series, and so for the Spurs trying to match that, getting Tony Parker to have one of those throwback games is one of the more reasonable routes for them to get there. So even if it's not necessarily that big of a loss in a given game, maybe it doesn't hit him in game 3, game 4, any particular game, it feels like over the balance of a 7-game series that this might be pretty meaningful for them because you're taking away one of their upside options. That's kind of how I'm feeling about it today.
Yeah, I have to agree with you. I mean, there are kind of two trains of thought here. I mean, at the one hand, you say, oh, you know, the Spurs, I think they went, they've been like 23-6 over the past couple of years when Parker's in his games. They were 7-1 without Kawhi during this past regular season. So this is a team that's kind of next man up is their kind of culture. And they're a deep team. They have guys who can take over like Mills and Ginobili. On the other hand, you're right. Parker was, you know, besides Kawhi, Parker was that kind of player that could kind of create off the dribble, drive through the hole, be a little bit crafty in the paint to avoid shot blockers like Capella. So he does provide a nice dimension and element to the Spurs offense. But at the same time, I'm of the opinion, kind of your first thought, that this may not be that big of an absence for the Spurs overall. I think for stretches they could struggle without Parker. I mean, Kawhi has been unstoppable in these first two games. Maybe there's a game where he is struggling a little bit and they don't have Parker to help him out, and that could be big. But overall, I think that kind of inserting Patty Mills, who is better defensively than Parker and more of a threat from three than Parker is, could actually put more pressure on the Rockets' defense. You know, we've seen the first two games, Beverly has kind of dared Parker to beat him, and last night he certainly did. He hit both of his threes, 8 of 13 from the field. He was really taking advantage of Beverly kind of, like, daring him to beat him from the perimeter. Now Beverly has to pay a little bit more attention to Patty Mills playing off-ball defense because Patty Mills is more of a threat from three. And Mills is just that kind of energy guy on defense. We saw him bothering Harden last night. Harden was getting a little bit frustrated, and there are other certain factors that played into that frustration. But I think Patty Mills and Ginobili are more than capable of handling the minutes that Parker had. And then they can certainly go with lineups that don't have a traditional point guard on the floor, which they did for stretches last night, with basically Ginobili handling the ball with Kawhi and then Jonathan Simmons, who got 20 minutes last night. So it could be a significant miss for certain stretches of games, but overall for the rest of the series, I'm not going to say that this injury will really change that much for the Spurs because they are that kind of next-man-up kind of team.
Yeah, and Jonathan Simmons is a big part of the equation. It didn't feel like he did much in Game 1. Last night, he was much more impactful, even hit a three. So obviously, if you have to play Manu more at the point and then raise Patty's minutes as well, you're going to have Simmons take up a few more minutes. That's kind of the trickle-down chain effect. So his variability, is he closer to Game 1 or is he closer to Game 2? That's certainly going to be a big factor. I think I'm mostly with you because generally from game to game, I don't think it's going to be a huge absence. It's not like you're going to see the Spurs starting off game three and say, man, with Patty Mills instead of Tony Parker, this team is just nowhere near as scary. In some ways, Patty Mills gives them new dimensions, as you were saying. I just feel like, again, it'll just hurt them in certain stretches, but over five games, I think it might stand out where Parker has a certain other gear. You know, you can never predict when he's going to get there, but that other gear can be pretty helpful, especially in big spots on the road. It was game four and game six for them in Memphis. He stepped up really big, and so that's another option that the Spurs don't have. But I think generally I'm with you from, you know, just a general game to game. It's not a huge absence. It's nothing that, other than on the surface, I mean, Tony Parker's a big name, so I know why folks in the media focus on it. But besides that, not really a huge, enormous situation, although a slight benefit to the Rockets. The other injury today that I want to get your take on, it's not necessarily an injury, but James Harden. There's been a few theories, of course, last night, 3 of 17, 1 of 9 in the first half. It's kind of amazing the Rockets were that close, even with Harden not playing that well, but he was clearly limited. We know there was the ankle in Oklahoma City series. We saw early in the game yesterday he had the hip worked on, seemed a little stiff. And then the takeaway after the game was that actually he's pretty ill. And I personally saw this today myself at practice. He's sneezing, wheezing, definitely under the weather. And I know this is a weird thing, Eric, but for me, I'm almost a little relieved. Because first off, an illness, while it definitely sucks, it's easier to get over an illness quickly than it is an injury. The other thing is that after the first few minutes the other night, there were just some strange things going on with James. It wasn't like it was just an ankle. It just seemed like he was lethargic overall. Defensively, he was not that aware. Offensively, he didn't really probe the paint the way he did in game one. And so to me, you know, you don't want anybody to be sick or anything like that, but among the plausible explanations for him to kind of be under the weather, that's probably about the best one there is if you want to, you know, if you're a Rockets fan and you want to have a bounce back from Harden this weekend. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I agree with that opinion. You know, last night, it was really hard. It was actually really tough for me to watch Harden last night. I'm someone who really enjoys his game, the way he analyzes the court, you know. And last night, it was something, I mean, even after the injury in the third quarter, he had some drives to the rim where he just threw up these kind of, he just threw it up to the rim, and it sometimes wasn't even close. And I was just like, you know, I really don't want to watch this. And he got a little bit too foul eager because he was having a lot of hard time driving to the rim and getting lift up on his layups and passing out to the perimeter, so we figured he would try and draw some fouls. He had, I think there were two instances where he tried to draw the three-point foul, ended up just chucking into the rim, and getting a turnover. So, you know, it's tough. Harden is someone who is extremely durable, but he is someone who, you know, especially this year towards the end of the season, has had a lot of nagging injuries. Mm. Injuries that you're not going to sit out games, but injuries that can almost completely render him useless. And for someone who has to drive that offensive machine, when he's not on his game, it's really hard for the other players to get going. Like, Ariza struggled yesterday as well. And then defensively for him, even before the injury, in the first couple of minutes of the game, he didn't look exactly focused on defense. He was losing Danny Green a lot. And you know, I mentioned in my Hoops Habit takeaways article that I think the Spurs are kind of like the Sharks, where they smell a poor James Harden game where he's not focused on defense. And they will just pounce on that like blood. I mean, they will pounce on any mismatch, any, you know, lack of focus from any Rockets defender, not just Harden, have Danny Green continuously run around the court to make Harden tired on defense. And Harden, obviously, we know, doesn't want to expend too much energy on defense because he has to control that offense. So, you know, there are a lot of instances where Danny Green was running around the perimeter, getting open shots. If Harden would close out too hard, Danny Green would go past him, and then Harden would kind of do either a lazy reach in or just let him drive in. And the Spurs with their ball movement, I mean, that's just killer right there. So, you know, if James can get over that kind of cold and the congestion and cough as soon as possible, that'd be great for him because he has to come out engaged both offensively and defensively. You know, he doesn't have to be a defensive stopper, but he cannot have another game two in game three. So he has to come out a little bit more engaged, a little bit more focused. And, you know, if he's struggling, if he continues to struggle in game three, he's just got to look for maybe to let other players create, give it to Eric Gordon and Lou Williams more instead of trying to draw fouls or just, you know, throw up some crazy layups. But we all hope that he can get healthy as soon as possible.
Yeah, one of the things that you mentioned, you discussed your Hoops Habit article, which I really enjoyed, your takeaways from game two. Something that you discussed in the article, and I've seen a few other places on Twitter today, was the pace. And clearly, the Rockets succeeded at getting the Spurs to play up-tempo, their style, game one. It was reversed last night. So I'm curious your takeaway. How much was the Spurs' adjustments versus how much was sort of self-inflicted a little bit by James? Because certainly the Spurs were a little bit more aggressive around the screens, I would say. But the other thing that kind of jumped out to me with regards to Harden, it just really did not look like James had the same gear when it came to pushing the tempo in transition. Maybe that gets back to, you know, his illness, whatever's going on with his hip, the things we were discussing earlier. But it seemed like there were a few chances where I wouldn't call it a fast break. It was a quasi-fast break where he could have pushed it to the rim. We saw him do that a lot in game one when he had 14 assists, seemed to be probing a lot. And last night, based on whatever was going on with him, he seemed a lot more willing to kind of back it back out, in my opinion. And so that's where, you know, is it 50-50? Just curious your take on how much was the Spurs adjustments versus how much was, you know, Harden, for whatever reason, just had a an off night?
Yeah, well, I think the main adjustment that the Spurs made in terms of personnel was inserting Pau Gasol to the starting lineup. And a lot of people on Twitter basically doubted, you know, myself included, I kind of doubted that that kind of insertion of Pau Gasol would help San Antonio, but it actually did. You look at the box score, Gasol only shot 3 of 11, but he had 4 blocks and 6 offensive rebounds. And a couple of them, he just completely just would tip it right out to an open shot for the Spurs. So, you know, he was really crucial because, unlike David Lee, when David Lee was starting, Pau Gasol was actually somewhat of a physical presence in the inside. He had 4 blocks, and he actually kind of intimidated a couple of rackets like Beverly when they would drive to the rim. You know, when you drive to the rim and you see David Lee there, you're going to attack him. When you drive to the rim and you see Pau Gasol, yes, he's old, he's lack of mobility, but when he's in the paint, when he's entrenched in the paint, he can still provide something there. And his 4 blocks were a good example of that. The other thing was that the Spurs were doing a lot better job of guarding that pick and roll with Harden and the big, especially Capella. They really did a good job of limiting the lobs to Capella, and they also did a great job of running the Rockets off the three-point line. You know, they had 53 point attempts in game one, only 34 in game two, in which they hit 11 of them for 32%. So, you know, there were some adjustments that the Spurs made defensively that kind of scared the Rockets from driving inside and altered their shots a lot. You know, I mentioned James throwing up these crazy layups, but Gordon had some opportunities where he was a little bit shaky on the inside, driving to the rim, and then running the Rockets off the three-point line and kind of preventing that lob is really big for the Spurs, because one of the biggest advantages that the Rockets have is if the Spurs really can't guard the pick and roll, you know, with two guys, they have to have some help defense, and that allows the Rockets to get threes. Last night they were able to do that because of Harden's limitations, you know, physically and maybe mentally. He was a little bit frustrated towards the second and third quarter. So those two adjustments, I think, are key for the Spurs. And then the Spurs hitting their shots on offense allows their defense to get set a little bit more, which obviously prevents the Rockets from running the pace that much and getting open transition looks. So those are three key things that happened on the Spurs side that kind of limited the Rockets' offensive attack in game two.
So what's the flip side of this, the adjustment that Mike D'Antoni needs to make going into game three tomorrow night? With Pau Gasol in the middle, and we know, as you're saying, 13 rebounds, 4 blocks, for all the mocking he gets on Twitter, his length was a real issue for them. What do the Rockets need to do? Is it a matter of trying, essentially, the way they adjusted to Steven Adams, just trying to get him into foul trouble, be more aggressive, taking it right to his chest? Or what are the things that you need to do to keep him from being as disruptive defensively as he was in game two?
One of the biggest things that I think they should do, and is one of my takeaways in that Hoops Habit article I mentioned, was the Rockets can actually run more screens to get mismatches, especially getting Gasol and Harden. So a couple of times in game two, Kawhi Leonard did an interesting thing where he actually went under the screen with Harden, you know, handling the ball. So, you know, I think smart enough, he knew that Harden didn't really have that lift, so, you know, Harden finished 2 of 9 on threes, and he was willing to take those contested threes sometimes in the pick and roll. But the other thing that the Rockets can do is when Kawhi or maybe a Danny Green goes under a Harden screen, or, you know, if it's Capella or even Nene, they can re-screen again to get the mismatch they want, because getting Gasol on Harden is exactly what you want. It pulls Gasol away from the rim, so even if Harden doesn't get past him, he can pass it to someone else, and Gasol is on the perimeter instead of in the rim waiting to block their shot or alter it. And at the same time, you know, you would expect Harden to have a bounce-back game, so even in game two, he was struggling to beat bigs consistently off the dribble. We can kind of attribute that to his illness, his tweaked hip or whatever. If he's even a little bit better physically, he will take advantage of a Gasol, or when Lee's in the game, do the same thing. So I think the biggest thing is kind of running more screens to get the mismatches, create more chaos, because the Spurs feast on when there's kind of, you know, an organized attack and system. So if the Rockets just run pick, to try and get the mismatch, and then Kawhi goes under, and meets Harden again under the pick. The Spurs are fine. They're still, guarding their man. They're still disciplined, et cetera. The Rockets can run more screens, get different mismatches, and just create some chaos for the Spurs, which I think will help them out offensively.
The other side of the game, the defense for the Rockets, I mean, we talked earlier about the perimeter defense and the need for Harden to be more engaged. But the other thing that really stood out last night was the rebounding, lost 47-32. They actually out-rebounded Oklahoma City, one of the better rebounding teams in the NBA, on the series. They're also very competitive on in Game 1. Now, Game 2, obviously the Spurs made the adjustment to start Gasol. That helped a little bit, and certainly his 13 rebounds were meaningful. But the flip side, I don't care who the center is, Clint Capela and Nene combined 4 rebounds in 43 minutes. That's just not going to get it done. So is there any adjustment to make other than just bring more energy? Because that's what it looks like to me. For whatever reason, maybe it's, the inevitable kind of happiness that comes from stealing Game 1 on the road happens to a lot of teams. But it seems like the biggest thing the Rockets needed to do from a rebounding perspective is just have more intensity. Because when you look at 2 6-foot-10, 6-foot-11 guys that have 4 rebounds in 43 minutes, I don't care what the schematic advantage or disadvantage is. At some point, you've just got to will, effort, whatever, go out there and grab a board. That's how I saw it. I'm just curious what you thought about their Clint Capela and Nene, their play yesterday, especially in terms of defense and rebounding.
Yeah, I mean, whenever your two centers get combined for 4 rebounds, you're going to get out rebound by a significant margin. And of course, rebounding, the first thing you always say is increase effort and kind of discipline with your box outs. And I think something interesting that maybe could have happened, this is just speculation, is maybe Capela, with David Lee starting Game 1, maybe Capela was not really necessarily used to, Pau Gasol being a couple of inches taller than Lee. He has those long arms, so he can just get up there and tip it right off the perimeter. Well, David Lee's not going to do that, especially against Capela. So maybe Capela was kind of, I don't want to say sleeping a little bit, but just kind of not fully aware of Gasol's ability to just get a hand and tip it out like those Tyson Chandler, what Tyson Chandler is known for doing in the later stages of his career. So all Gasol really did, he didn't really grab a lot of offensive rebounds. I think I counted it. 5 of those offensive rebounds were just him kind of getting his long arm, just tipping it out of Capela's hand to the perimeter for the Spurs to get another offensive possession. And then Nene, he was going against the bench big, so he was just having a weak game rebounding, and that happens from time to time. But again, I think, like you said, kind of just that overall feeling of, after a blowout on the road, it's really easy to just have a letdown. The Rockets had a letdown in Game 2 against the Thunder. The difference is that they were at home, and it was against the Thunder, who are a significantly worse team and less weapons around them than the Spurs do. So, in the end, it comes down to energy, effort, and just knowing who you're boxing out. Capela's got to go up there and grab that rebound early, or at least tip it to James or Beverly or someone like that. Just waiting for the rebound to come to him just allows Gasol to get those locks and tip it out.
Good take. As we close out this segment, I'm just curious about any X factors we haven't mentioned that you think might be important this weekend. I'll throw in one for me, and it's going to be those minutes without Harden early in the second and fourth quarter. It's funny, we've heard so much talk today, just box score reflections, Harden going 3 of 17, that's obviously not good enough. But the flip side to that, despite him, struggling so much from the field, he actually had one of the better plus-minuses on the entire team. And when you look at when things really got away for the Rockets, it was that stretch early in the fourth quarter. I'm looking, actually, yeah, Harden was minus 13, which, even with all his struggles, was the best of anyone in the starting lineup. And when things really got away from them, it was the early minutes of the fourth quarter where they could get nothing going offensively. Lou Williams didn't give them anything at all last night. Eric Gordon, he was good in the first half, but in the second half, he was a liability. And the thing that stood out, that, of course, was a direct contrast to the Harden-less minutes in Game 1. Those bench minutes, I called them, in Game 1, Lou and Eric, they actually expanded the lead. It was early in the second. It was only an 11-point game. I use only loosely. Only an 11-point game after the first quarter. And then all of a sudden, that unit with Harden on the bench boosted it to over 20. That's how effective they were. And in Game 2, it was the exact opposite. So for me, that's where I'm looking at. What happens in those 5 to 6 minutes early in the second, early in the fourth quarter? Because in Game 1, it was a huge positive for the Rockets. In Game 2, it was the complete 180-degree opposite. So that's, something off the radar I'm monitoring going into Game 3. Curious, anything that we haven't discussed that you might also be looking at as the scene shifts back to Houston this weekend?
Yeah, you already mentioned one of the players that I think could be an X-factor, and that's Lou Williams. 2 of 7 for 4 points. He had 2 turnovers. He only played 18 minutes, while Eric Gordon played 29, because Gordon was actually a lot better in the first half. Lou has got to be on his game. He's having basically his first ever, good playoff performance in his, seventh, playoff appearance. But he, for him to go cold in this series, it could be a killer, because then you're relying on Eric Gordon a lot, and, you know, you can't really rely on one person of man team, that bench unit, especially if Beverly's kind of hit or miss offensively. I thought Beverly did a great job early in the second quarter of running the offense, but in that fourth quarter, that offense was just, I mean, it was miserable. And then, you know, I want to see if Ryan Anderson can continue this hot shooting at home. You know, we have that road Ryan joke, but it's actually real. I mean, his percentages on the road versus at home are something incredible. I really can't believe it. 18 points, 8 rebounds. He had 4 offensive rebounds yesterday. He was really active, played probably his best game in a while, and he was still a minus 26 in plus-minus. So, you know, if he can continue his hot shooting, that will allow him to stay on the floor. He's been really good defending Aldridge. But what it comes down to is again, that bench unit. Beverly, he has to. I'm looking at Beverly defensively now. Offensively, I think he's done a great job. Defensively, he's not sagged off Mills like he's been sagging off Parker. He's been going under screen, going the ball. You can't really do that with Mills. He is a threat from outside, and Mills is a lot more active, a lot more, he's younger. So Beverly's got to be locked in defensively, and then that bench unit really just has to maintain, not really build on Lee, just maintain it if they're losing.
Yeah, that's an interesting. That's a very interesting point with Beverly. I think it was so easier to be locked in game one, round one, defensively, because Russell Westbrook, every game, you know, that's like showing a, you know, a red cape to a bull, basically. You know, all of a sudden he's ready to go, raring, chomping at the bit. Whereas series two, the focus is off him a little bit. Maybe it's a little more challenging to get him to play that same style, but certainly against Patty Mills, not saying Patty Mills is Russell Westbrook, but you're going to have to treat him a little more aggressively than you would the classic going under screens, which was the game plan for Tony Parker. Because, yeah, with Tony Parker gone, pretty much whoever the Spurs can throw out there at the point guard spot is going to be able to hit pull-up threes off the dribble. So I think that's a pretty damn good point. Eric, thank you so much for the time. This is Eric Spyropoulos, NBA writer for Hoops Habit, 16 wins a ring. Before you go, tell folks where they can find you on Twitter, as well as what you're going to be working on over the weekend once the series gets back to Houston starting tomorrow night.
All right, you can follow me on Twitter at Eric Spyros, just a shortened version of my last name. And then you'll find all of my work this weekend and next weekend at Hoops Habit. I do takeaways from every game as the series,
just
Houston.
Yep, sounds good. Eric, thank you so much for the time, and I'll be chatting with you again soon, okay?
All right, thanks, Ben. Thanks.
Sure thing. That's Eric Spyropoulos, NBA writer for Hoops Habit and 16 Wins a Ring, Rockets beat writer for Hoops Habit. Thought he had some really good insight on the X's and O's of the game. Said a lot of things that really make you think, and this stuff about the matchups in the absence of Tony Parker. It can be an advantage for the Rockets because certainly Parker's leadership is upside in certain situations they might miss. But yeah, there were dynamics last night where they were better with Patty Mills on the floor, and he does some things that actually present some problems and make the likes of Pat Beverly cover even more of the floor. So as always, great insight from Eric. Appreciate having him on the show. As always, if you're not already following him, you should definitely do that on Twitter, at Eric Spyros. Anyway, I think we've broken down about everything we can in the aftermath of Game 2 and leading up to Game 3, so I will leave it right there. Once again, this is Locked On Rockets, your home for daily podcast coverage of the Houston Rockets. You can follow us on Twitter, at Locked On Rockets. Follow me on Twitter, at Ben Dubose, and email us at lockedonrockets@gmail.com. If you've got questions, suggestions, or questions about becoming a potential sponsor of this program, just as our friends at SeatGeek were today. Remember, download that SeatGeek mobile app and enter the promo code LORockets, and you can get a $20 rebate today off of your first purchase from SeatGeek. So folks, hope all of you guys are able to get tickets, I know it's not reasonable for everybody to get tickets, but a healthy percentage of those of you in Houston, because this is going to be really fun. It's pretty rare to get this deep in the playoffs, and especially against a big rival like the Spurs. And then, after all that, to have two weekend primetime games, there's opportunity for Toyota Center to be absolutely jumping both Friday and Sunday night. Going to be a great atmosphere. I hope you guys are able to come out there. Look forforward to seeing some of you. Just tweet me at Ben Dubose. I'd love to come say hi at some point during the games. And, of course, for now, well, get some sleep, get some rest, because we want everybody to be at their loudest and committed, ready to go on a Friday night, because certainly the crowd in San Antonio thought they were a big factor in Wednesday's game too, especially in terms of some of the 50-50 officiating calls that we talked about last night and today. I think the crowd always has a healthy bit to do with that. The crowd in San Antonio was great. Rockets were dominant in game one. Now they literally took them out entirely, took them out of the arena. Game two, though, that was a more prototype Spurs environment. That's also why it's going to be tough to win a Game 5 or a Game 7 in San Antonio. So if you're the Rockets, you have home court advantage. You want to protect that home court and win the games when that advantage is yours. So if you're a Rockets fan listening to this podcast, get your rest and come in Friday ready to go. Hope this is going to be a really fun environment because it absolutely should be. It's a great team in a great spot in the second round. And, of course, they're deserving of all of this support. But whatever happens afterward, we will have you covered right here on Locked On Rockets as we have, well, for pretty much 9 months now, every day during the week, and, well, even the weekends when we have these playoff games on Friday and Sunday, as we do in the next couple of days. So for now, go out and get your rest and look forward to seeing you guys tomorrow night at Toyota Center when the Rockets take on the Spurs in Game 3 of this best-of-7 second-round series. For now, enjoy your day.